This episode of The Breakfast Dish is brought to you by Inventures, your front row seat to what's next. Register now for Inventures 2022, where you can learn, share, and be inspired by the startups, entrepreneurs, investors, and global thought leaders who are redefining the future. Inventures runs June 1st to 3rd in Calgary and online, featuring more than 150 sessions, over 250 speakers, international keynotes, expert panels, startup pitch events, networking opportunities, and more. Reserve your pass now at InventuresCanada.com. That's InventuresCanada.com.
Tell me your dreams over bacon and eggs. We'll share a laugh and a story and even a wish on the breakfast dish.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to episode Expo of The Breakfast Dish, this podcast that I, Karen Johnson-Diamond, host with my son, Griffin Cork, and we are today live at the Calgary Expo, so it doesn't matter what episode number it is.
I was going to say, do you know the real number?
I have absolutely no idea.
I think it's 71.
Okay, that's awesome. Episode 71 of The Breakfast Dish.
We are recording this live at the Calgary Comic Expo, so it'll be a little bit harder to edit if I'm wrong, so... No holds barred.
See, I was trying to do you a favor. Just episode
That's
Expo.
Fair.
I don't need, yeah, just episode.
Gross. Now, I know this is an audio medium for those of you listening at home and aren't here currently. I need to talk about something, and it's something that I guess I've repressed for the last 20 minutes. Karen picked me up. We've traveled here together, and she showed up in this costume. And, you know, I understand that there's a lot of nerd culture that I am not privy to or not as well versed in. But Karen, do you want to explain what you're dressed as?
Yes, I'm dressed as Nelna from Helm and Diamond.
And what property is that?
Property?
Yeah, what property is the character? Is it like an original character?
Yes. Yes, it's very original.
Interesting. Tell me the backstory of this character.
Well, Nelna, if you know the clip, Nelna is the clip's creative. So
the clip isn't clippy?
No, the clip. Okay, you have to be really familiar with Helm and Diamond.
You have to be, and it's impossible to be because it's your original character.
The clip,
right?
Is our anti-hero, and Nelna is his creative.
Okay.
Then it's the entire story of the creation of Norway.
I don't know what you're saying. You're doing Nordic lore for me right now? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm totally doing Nordic lore. Hardanger Lefse, man.
But I need to just... Visually describe your costume to me.
Okay, all right. I'm wearing a blue tie-dyed skirt and a bright green shirt. And I have my red sash around my corner. I have my red sash around my shoulder.
Now, I need to be clear about this. It's not a red sash.
No,
it's one of my ties.
No, it's
red tie.
Dad's
and I
tie.
See that it's stapled.
It's your dad's tie. It's not stapled. It's held with a pronouns button.
Got it.
I've got my red sash and it's pulling my necklace to the side, as you'll see in any drawings of Nelna.
Huh.
And I have my balls on my ears and my balls on my fingers. And my boots. And my... I don't know what you call it. I call it a cuff. Like a snow muff you put your arms into.
Yeah.
Because it's snowy in Norway.
That's right. What do we do on The Breakfast Dish? It's not all cosplay stuff. We don't talk about the costume all the time.
No, we don't.
You call me out on what I'm wearing often, whenever I record in my hoodie.
Never care what I'm wearing.
This time I do, I guess.
You tell them. I've talked a lot about Nelna. You talk and tell us what the podcast is about.
The Breakfast Dish is a collection of interviews we do with a lot of Canadian artists, be they actors, directors, filmmakers, painters, musicians, festival programmers, anything along the spectrum we'll chat with. We're really interested in the way that people work and like the way that people create and how they view other people's work. And today we are joined by, I would say, Calgary Comic Expo royalty. And I forgot to tell him that he could jump in with bits whenever he wanted, but he's been very polite so far. Spencer Estabrooks.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well. Did you have any first impressions of Karen's costume, or did you think this was normal?
Well, she had this like Kermit the Frog water bottle, so I thought it could be like somehow related.
Oh, there's like totally like Henson crossover with Helm and Diamond.
Because I'm like, is
that
interesting?
Is it Marvel DC? I guess it's Henson.
Okay, cool. It's Henson.
I was going to say, yeah, when Henson comes knocking at our door,
yeah, it's Henson.
Cease and desist. Yeah, okay,
great. Norwegian names like Johnson or Henderson, it's Hensonson. Here's what I know. Sharkosaurus.
Okay.
Bicopolyps. Bicopolyp. You say it.
Bikepocalypse.
Ooh.
Bikepocalypse. And being around Spencer, I only have three speeds. Ill, chill, and givener.
I just noticed, I'm sorry, I know I'm interrupting. I just noticed you also have silver paint on your hand. Is that part of the...
Yes.
Okay, that was the first time I noticed.
Spencer, I know to be an amazing Alberta filmmaker that you talk about all the time.
Oh, that's true. Spencer, true. What brings you to the Expo this year?
Well, I've been coming to the Expo for a couple years. I normally have a couple nerdy projects I'm always trying to bring people's awareness of. And so, yeah, now I've got a little guest table and I sit there and, you know, I schlock series One Hit Die, which Griffin Cork is familiar with. He was cast in one of the episodes. And, yeah, Sharkosaurus and some of my other comic book and film projects. Yeah.
I was leaving One Hit Die for you to talk about because that's, like, Julie Orton Philbert. You are famous to have worked with them.
I know, yeah.
So
I'm famous by association, thanks to Spencer Estabrook.
Right?
Do you
want to
talk about One Hit Die?
Yeah, well, we can start with One Hit Die.
Hit me.
Yeah, well, like, One Hit Die is like Lord of the Rings shot like The Office, like a D&D meta mockumentary. We started We started it a couple years ago, and we did, like, it's, we started, it was an Alberta Foundation of the Arts project, and then we just had so much fun doing it, I got really excited. I'm like, let's do a Christmas special, and we, I think, raised a couple $1,000, had a fundraiser, and did, like, a Christmas special. And then Telus got on board, and started giving us money to do a longer form, and you know, we started taking it around, and I think we've done three seasons now. I know we've done three seasons, and we have lots of like weird behind the scenes extras that we always do. Like I think on the last Devouring Dungeon season, you know, I intentionally finished early, like or at least on time as far as low budget filmmaking goes.
Nice.
But then I'm like, I go to the crew. I'm like, guys, I need everybody to stay around for like another hour. I have an idea. And like everybody was just like looked at me like with a little, but I'm like, come on guys, it'll be great.
It is a very interesting atmosphere on set when like everyone thinks that the day is almost done and the director goes, I actually have this kind of crazy thing I want to do.
Because there was a day we had so Bleeding Arts made this it's a mimic sofa, and for those of you who don't know what D&D is, it's like a mimic is a monster that pretends to be something else, like a chest and traps people. This is a mimic sofa, so it's a sofa that like opens its mouth and eats people, and it's it's a puppet, and I'm just like, you know, I think it'd be super cool if we just stick around for an extra hour. It won't take that long, just a couple shots. Because how often do you get like a well-lit set, a mimic puppet, so that I could make a music video and record Monty Python's Sit on My Face song.
I'm telling you that you love me, sit on my face and say I love you truly.
Oh, hold on everybody. Karen wants to decide that there's going to be 20 seconds of the podcast with no observations. Go ahead, Karen.
I love to hear you.
Moralize.
When I'm between your thighs.
When I'm between your thighs, you blow me away, right? Sit on my face. I'll embrace you. I'll sit in your face and tell you I love you too.
So did you have the puppet mouth along, like, mouth the words?
Yes. Yes, yes.
You shot this video in under an hour?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not, like, we did, like, I think three setups, right?
Yeah.
A little close up. But yeah, it wasn't like a lot, and it's a very short song.
Sure.
There's only one actor, and I took the tempo of the audience, I mean the crew, and they didn't want to stay longer, so we did what we could with the time that I could squeeze. But it was ridiculous, and I think we all sang along at the same time too, so ridiculous.
It's kind of hard not to sing to that song.
It's also really fascinating, I think, having a project that starts out as something like truly like homegrown and like supported just in the people making it, being like, this is a blast, and then having someone like a broadcaster like Telus be like, that's a cool thing and we want to help it. Like, that's, sadly, not a story you hear a lot.
You know, and the funniest part was for the third season, like, when we did the Devouring Dungeon, because we were on the Telus video on demand.
Yeah, yeah. Optic.
But, yeah, that's but right. When they came back, like, when they came to me, approached me for the third season, they were like, because they were looking at their metrics, and it was like in the top 10. They weren't allowed to say it. It was in the top 10 of their VOD spots.
Really?
Wow.
Because I think they were, at that time, like, they're always mixing stuff up over there, But when it first came out, they, you know, Telus does little ads, like on the channels.
Yeah.
It showed up during The Walking Dead, our trailer, and our trailer looks great. And it's just like, just that little hiccup, you know, just when so many people suddenly see, oh, what is that? Oh, that's on Telus VOD. And they go over and click on it. So it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, if you, you know, it's the old adage, it's hard to like, the only thing that's the difference between like a great movie no one sees and a terrible movie everyone sees is like how much marketing you put into it.
Yeah.
And like, and when a One Hit Die trailer shows up in like a Walking Dead TV show or like in a commercial break and like, you know, millions of people watch it, a large percentage of those people are going to be like, hey, what is this? This is pretty cool. Let me go check it out. So that's why I did it. But they don't always do that.
No. It's interesting. We got a message like that for Abracadabras once for our first season. Where they were like, we can't say where, but you're in the top 10. But I wonder why not. Like, I wonder why they don't share that kind of information.
I think it's because they're not allowed. Like, no one likes to share analytics. Like, Netflix doesn't like to share their analytics. No one, everyone keeps their data close to the chest. Probably because they don't want you to know how much they watch what we watch.
Right.
Watch us watching. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly, but it's a, yeah. So it's but it was fun, and it's like if you got space to advertise, like it makes such a big difference.
Yeah, there was a breakdown I think of like it was either the first Sharkosaurus or the Sharknado.
Yeah.
Or the second Sharknado, where like the marketing budget of those two movies were almost like exactly parallel to the production budget. It was like they spent $2 million on production and also $2 million just on marketing. Like, it's crazy.
I do that. That's the problem with my projects, is I've got such a small budget to begin with. I spend it all with whatever we can.
Us too. Yeah.
And then there's just not a lot left over for marketing. And if they gave us more marketing money, I'd probably just spend it in production because I like making movies.
Yeah.
I have to step in here and say, I think it's Melman Diamond that's at the top of the 10. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, that's why they don't want to tell you. They don't want you to feel...
I just want to clarify something. Your original character that you made up 20 minutes ago is the top viewed thing,
yes,
on Telus Optic.
Yes,
TV.
Yes.
And what sense? It had a
commercial during Days of Our Lives.
Yes.
It had a commercial.
Yeah, it went like this. Like, the scene in Days of Our Lives went like this. Martin, I'm pregnant, and you're not the father. And then cut out to Nellan going, Kaminsky! And then...
And sorry, can I just hear Nellan's voice one more time?
Kaminsky!
Interesting. To keep the cosplay going, and I would say like 100% accurate, your visuals are great. You're sounding a little not like Nellan. So if you could do the rest of the podcast in that Nellan voice you just picked, that would be great.
I think you'll be really sorry you asked me that.
You're right. I already am, and I'm doubly back on it. Good lord. Now, it was a Freudian slip, but I do want to talk a little bit about Sharkosaurus, because I'm pretty sure it was formatted in a very similar way, where it started as like something small and like,
oh, yeah,
passion project driven that just like exploded.
Well, Sharkosaurus was the very first Story Hive project picked. Like, the first time they did it.
What?
Like,
the first edition?
And like, and people, I saw all the other Story Hives that came after that, and I'm just like, you guys have it so easy. You did not know what it was like when Telus really didn't know what they were doing.
Totally! Oh my god!
Because when it came out, it was like, what Story Hive is, it's, you get a chance to win $10,000 for a production based on people voting for you. But they weren't that organized. So, A, they gave us like a month of like voting time. It wasn't like a week or so, it was a full month. And I just went stir crazy.
Yeah.
You're like, you're checking the results, like where you are on the rankings and just trying to like, and I came up with all these like super weird, because I've just got time to stew on my juices, like the full month, all these weird grassroots marketing things. So I would have like a lost Sharkosaurus poster that like a lost paleontologist, if you see, like to... That you, like,
I remember up. Those. I remember seeing those.
Yeah, and then there was
Julie
like,
and Jason.
We were on Twitter. We were doing YYC Sharkosaurus reviewing burgers. we took out ads and the personal ads, like paleontologist seeking creationist looking for threesome with Sharkosaurus.
Like an actual newspaper personal ads.
Yeah, and it would go to like the. So like just anywhere I could think for free or to like put the sharkosaurus.com, which would go to the voting thing, you know, and just anywhere, and like just,
wow,
like, yeah, and it was a month of this, and it was just like none, like
yeah,
by
yeah.
the end of it I was just, oh my god, if I lose this company, I put in way too much work.
Slowly, story, I've started to realize, one, that a month-long voting period is far too long, and then eventually that voting is not a good idea in the first place. So they moved it to kind of like a jury deciding like what projects have merit. But yeah, the beginning story had projects. You would just go for 3 weeks, and like every, you just see it in every film group in Calgary being like, six different story I post a day being like, hey guys, support the indie, click on three, everyone's got five votes. Oh, yeah, I'm really glad they moved away from that system, good lord.
What world would be like if we had true democracy?
Yes, certainly, that's right.
Let's be political.
Yeah, and if you had a month-long election period.
Exactly.
Actually, I don't know, and you had five votes every day. I don't know, they've actually kind of pissed me off today. Here's three more from the other guy.
Right?
Although back in the day, there was something that I was voting for, and I don't remember. It was ages ago, like when voting online first started, and we discovered that you could vote.
America's Got Talent.
No, but close. But you could vote on all your different devices, so it didn't recognize you as the same person if you were on your laptop or your other laptop or your tablet or your phone or your desktop.
That might have been when I was having you vote for Abracadabra season one.
I feel like it was before that.
Okay.
It was probably something you were involved in because
you told me about that tactic.
I remember voting for something five times a day. Well, I would say I figured it out, but it was your father who figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And Sharkosaurus is a lot of the product that you have here right now at the expo.
It's a ton of the stuff. So after when I did the Sharkosaurus short film, I was like, I loved it. It was fun. But, you know, I had so many big ideas. I'm just like, I don't think a film could contain them. And I don't think any, like, one would give me the money to make the film I wanted to make.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, you know what? I love graphic novels.
I swear. Hell yeah. Breakfast Dish. Fuck.
Fuck yeah. I love graphic novels. So I'm like, oh, you know what? Why don't I just do a graphic novel? So we did kickstarted a graphic novel and made a 96-page book. Renegade Arts Entertainment.
Wait, nice. 96 page?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of pages for a graphic novel.
It's a ton of pages. Like, it's like that whole undertaking. You know, when you get this idea, like, oh yeah, I'll do this, and then you actually do it. It's crazy. But Renegade Arts Entertainment, they're like Western Canada's largest publisher out of Canmore.
Yeah.
They published it for me. But yeah, the whole project, because again, I'm used to film, so I get 30 people around for like a weekend or like a week, and we get something done, right? And it's, you know, beginning, ending, do it. Graphic novels, I mean, you work with like a colorist and an artist for like a year. And it's just such a different pace of things and a different way of like working that again, I'm just not used to. Like there would be times where like, you know, 'cause we're behind schedule, like everything. but there'd be times like the artist is like, oh, I've got a cold. I can't work this week. And on a film set, if you get a cold, you just take a bunch of like Sudafed or whatever.
Buck up
and get her done. I'm like, what do you mean you have a cold and can't draw? What are you talking about? Like, for a week? What kind of cold is this? Like, what?
You have a cold and you can't draw.
This is my experience just working with artists is that it takes a lot to like create art. Mm-hmm. Actually, to like, you have to be in the right headspace. I'm not saying that film doesn't create art. It's just film is like, you know, building, like it's physical and it's doing stuff and you've got to plan beforehand and there's people around you to like help you. But for an artist just to be like working by himself, you know, it is difficult.
Well, film is a lot more like procedure, right? Yeah. Where I feel like, especially for graphic novels, I feel like every process is different depending on like the amount of characters and, you know what I mean? Like because you also, I imagine, also wrote it.
Yeah.
Right. And so you worked with the, that would be very complicated working. Did you have say in like, how the panels were structured or was that left to someone else?
I started that way. But then, you know, you start to like, I think that, again, coming from a film background where the director is very distanced from the writer. But the director is more of the artist. And like, I would write in panels and stuff like that of how I would want it. And he would send back layout sketches, which were either very close to what I did or different. And it's really interesting to see the give and take because I'm like, oh, you know what? That's a far more interesting way of like breaking up the pages, has more movement to the page.
And yeah.
It was such a great learning process for me just to be working with an artist, building this and like going back and forth and looking at give and take. And like, yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed the process. Fantastic. But it was long. It took a really long time to do. And then the publishing, like, I mean, you know, it takes a long time to publish a book. Like,
totally.
If you have like a publisher, it's just like, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's, you can't just run down to the printers and get like 3,000 bucks. You gotta like put an order in, wait a month.
Go down to Staples.
Start like, you know, like teasing people out, get people interested. And like the publishing industry is, it's a lot slower than the digital world.
Yeah, certainly. Now, Karen, as a graphic novel reader, or shall I say love comic reader, hearing about all the processes that one goes through to make a graphic novel, do you think that while you were reading your love comics, you properly appreciated the flow between panels?
We spoke last time about my reading of the romance comics, Young Love, etc., me appreciating the drawings that Jack Kirby did in the love comic world. And as I mentioned, you know, on soap operas, when you're watching TV, one phase of our lives, somebody will say something and then someone will walk towards the camera. So we get like an emotional close-up, and Joey on Friends calls it smell the fart acting, but they move forward towards the camera and have their reaction and say something like, Tony, I'm not your mother, something like that, right?
Oh.
But in the panel of the love comics, they do that by just drawing the characters closer to the foreground of the panel.
Yeah.
And usually, as I have mentioned in the past, and people just need to pick up a couple romance comics and check this out. Usually, the panel
this is turning into a political speech.
Cuts out,
as I have mentioned before.
I think, you know what? Like, I want people to appreciate the artistry of this. They cut out, the panel cuts the torso, cuts in only the torso of the woman. So her speech bubble is always coming from her boob.
Ah, this is the boob talk.
The boob talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's his name? I want to say Lichtenstein. Okay, never mind. I can't even tell the story. There is a famous artist that has taken panels from comics and blown them up and gotten a whole bunch of controversy. Keep talking. I'll figure out what it is.
Okay, great.
What kind of romance comics would you recommend? I haven't read a lot of romance comics.
Ooh, that's interesting.
There's a great series with Johnny Love. And I think the Johnny Love character goes through the Young Romance series. But Young Romance is a good one. Sweethearts is a good one. I can't remember the names of all of them. We read these comics, my sister, my cousin, and I, growing up in a tent in Lac La Biche every summer. And we would buy these romance comics for 5 cents at garage sales and read them. So now they're worth so much money. I have so much money in love comics, but probably not because we actually opened them and read them. You know, and
right, because they're still you don't have any mint ones.
No, I don't have any mint ones. No, we opened and read them on sandy beaches.
Do you ever get anything like that, like any kind of collecting?
Yes, but I just want to say briefly that I have written a love comic.
Stop it. What's it called? Sharkamore.
Sharkasaurus.
Oh, that's true.
Sharkasaurus is actually a love story.
That's really true.
I actually forget that it's truly a love story.
I'm buying this book before we leave.
Okay.
It's here, right?
I have a copy also, but by Spencer's. What am I doing? I'm ruining his merch sales.
It's basically Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
Except instead of Capulets and Montagues, there's Croesus and Paleontologists. And two star-crossed lovers caught between them. And it's about whether or not people can overcome
right.
their ideological differences and become better versions of themselves.
Sharkasaurus.
Right?
Sharkasaurus. Wherefore art thou, Sharkasaurus? By any other name, that would bite as hard.
Nice.
And like, basically, and this is back when, I guess, when I was doing this, like 2016, 2017, you know, like, I was looking at the world, and at that time, we were in a divided world, right? The left and right were constantly at war with each other, and it's gotten worse since then.
I was going to say, now we're totally unified.
but like, the thing about Sharkasaurus is I found the thing that brings people together, that brings the left and right together, the thing that unites all people. We all die. That's what Sharkasaurus does, brings people together one bite at a time, you know? And that's the love we put in the world.
That's beautiful, man. Of course you're a writer. That's amazing.
Griffin's weeping.
Enough! Don't call me out of my own podcast.
Okay, seriously, talk about something. I want to look up this artist. Come on.
This episode of The Breakfast Dish is brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout out to
High Level Hip Hop. CJSR presents High Level Hip Hop. It's a deep dive into Edmonton's hip hop scene and the artists helping shape it. And the show takes a unique approach to introducing listeners to the OGs and young bloods of Edmonton hip hop scene. I shouldn't be saying that, but I am. It's scripted. The show is aimed at those who love local music, but might not have had a chance to fall in love with the city's surprisingly diverse hip hop scene.
Each episode features an interview with a local artist, plus a fresh track they recorded at CJSR. Check out episodes with Arlo Maverick, Please Be Nice, and more throughout the season. High Level Hip Hop is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. Download it wherever you find podcasts and at highlevelhiphop.transistor.fm.
Listen, I nail young bloods, but someone needs to teach me how to say OGs.
What is an OG?
I think it means original gangster.
Oh, that's me.
So this is something that I don't know enough about, but you had to be an excellent sticker at... First, tell me about what you collected.
Because I did collect comics when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
I was big into Batman, and I had, like, a huge stack of comics. Forgotten Realms, this weird character, Ralph Snart, like, a bunch of indie stuff, and a bunch of, like... And I had, like, stacks and stacks, but I still hope my mom has them, but I try and not collect stuff as much.
Right.
Because, and if I do, I'm really specific. Like, I had a VHS collection, like, 10 tapes. And it'd be like, you know, Bride with White Hair, this, like, weird Hong Kong thing, Evil Dead 2. Like, just really specific genre stuff that inspires me. So, like, I try and not, like, dabble too much into, like, full collection. Mm. Although, currently, I am collecting bicycles. But we'll get back to that.
You're collecting full bicycles?
I fall into this thing. We can talk about this in a bit. It probably has to do with my other project. We should talk about the Ballad of Shunkosaurus too.
We should. I thought you were going to say in terms of like, I've stopped collecting things because it has something to do with like storage and like I don't want to seem like a hoarder, but if you're now collecting full bicycles, yeah, that cannot be a problem for you.
My underground parking, it looks like... a bicycle chop
show. Oh my lord. You're...
Okay, let's go back to the comic conversation for 1 second. I was right. It's Lichtenstein. Roy Lichtenstein. You have to have a look at the art. You'll see... Now you'll see what I'm talking about because if you look him up,
right,
you'll recognize. But this was the controversy. He was an artist, but he would take drawings from illustrators from romance comics and then do them up again. And sometimes he'd keep the speech bubble words and sometimes he wouldn't. So, yeah, I was not wrong when I said pointillism and Lichtenstein, and I feel super smart right now.
Right, but what is, what I don't know is what is pointillism? Is it just...
Yeah, dot, dot, dot. It's all the little tiny dots. Can you tell? This is an audio medium, so I'm showing a picture.
I'm sure I'll post some link or something in the podcast notes if you've gotten this far.
Anyway, Roy Lichtenstein, 1923 to 1997.
I've seen his art now I'm looking at it, I've seen his art and I didn't realize the controversy, but I fully understand just because, right now, like, we're in the guest area, there's so many artists and I talk to them all the time at the expo here, like, well, afterwards, and I just, you know, they spend so much time perfecting their art and perfecting these characters. Like, the art and illustration that goes into your comic book is incredible. And, you know, when I'm looking, and then for someone to come along, like, and basically Andy Warhol your art.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I understand that controversy. I understand how artists would be, you know, frustrated by that. But, he is creating something new with pointillism. It is. I understand the controversy. I'm like,
Why? Because I also wonder if there was some metaphorical take on doing a love comic in terms of pointillism. Because, like, I wonder if, like... the idea of love comics just kind of being like kind of cranked out stories. If like the idea of like a very precise pinpoint thing to make this woman's face that may have just been relegated to a love interest. Like, I wonder if that's the...
That is such an awesome bullshit metaphor.
Totally bullshit.
No, it's totally... Like,
do you think Campbell's got mad at Andy Warhol? Was that awesome for them or was that terrible for them?
Campbell's and I don't know. That's a good question.
It was Campbell's, right? That was the soup Campbell's. Yeah, okay, great.
Campbell's tomato soup, I think. Yeah.
I wonder if that was so cool for Campbell's that like their stock prices went, or if it was really bad. I can't imagine it was bad.
No, because they don't make money off of. It's got to be great because it identifies them as a brand. It
right.
Creates a universal like visual. Yeah.
And the money he probably made a good amount of money on it, but it probably only happened once, right? Like, he's not constantly making profits off it every
you
time.
Royalties from painting.
I don't think so. I don't know how that works.
Know.
But I think that he could make prints of it. And sell it.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay.
Well, I will tell you, speaking of money, that my sister...
I'm broke.
My sister Kimmy had about 8 of the comics that actually had the panels that Lichtenstein ripped off. And she sold those comics like for hundreds of bucks each.
Right, because that was something you started doing for a while there, mid-pandemic, is selling off some of like your most prized love comics, or the rarest?
I haven't done the love comics yet. I'm working on your dad's D&D stuff.
Oh, that's right,
Do you have any Spelljammer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you should come look at my dad's stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if I sold that.
There'll be stuff that you're interested in,
but you know what there is? Yeah. There are a couple just obscure 1980s Alberta-made comics in there. I'm just going to give to you because nobody would appreciate them.
No.
I don't know what they're called, like Bongo or Bonko or something like that.
I would love to see these. I would love to amazing.
It has to be something would appreciate.
I know someone made an Alberta comic named Bonko.
It's something like that.
And then I also just want to see your dad's basement where he keeps all his D&D stuff because it sounds super cool.
A lot of it is like notebooks of like homebrew stuff he made. The D&D podcast we record, the Dias cast, is like using a lot of Cobalt Press's material, but is the structure of the world, like this kind of post-apocalyptic world, is based off of a world that he homebrewed at like 24 with his friends in college. It's very cool. Have I told you the Whammo story? Speaking of Bonko?
What's Whammo?
Exactly. So we were at, me and a few of my Numera film buddies were at Banff World Media Festival. And it was like the last night, and we went to like the E1 Netflix party, whatever, and just got totally trashed. So we're in our hotel room. It's me, Jordan, Joseph, and Morgan. And we had just finished watching Archie, which is a DVD that was being handed out at the festival. And it was a cyborg dog that saved the world, voiced by Michael J. Fox. Terrible movie. But we watched it, and it was kind of nuts. And then we went on some hotel TV station, and it was like... Oh, it was like how I think a lot of the Western cultures views a lot of Japanese game shows, except it was all fully in English. So there would be symbols on a wheel, and we like tuned in halfway through, and so they'd go like, and like land on like a spiral and a duck face. And then the host would go, all right, so are you going to do it? And the contestant would be like, I'm going to say 46 on Texas, Scott. And then the host would go, that's Whammo! And then they spin another wheel. Like, the rules were incomprehensible if you didn't know the show. So we watched this show for like 25 minutes, and it was nothing. So they would go to a different wheel, and then a chart would come up, and then there'd be 4 rows of, like, different family types. And then they'd drop a ball down, and there's like, well, you got 3 kids, so you know what you're going into for the next round. And the whole audience would be like, ha, yeah, 3 kids!
Whammo!
Yeah, that's Whammo. Or maybe Bammo? I can't remember.
I'm going to look that up on YouTube now.
Wow. It's nuts.
Look it up.
Wow.
I want to go back to the bikes. The collecting of bikes. Well, here's why. Because Griffin and I normally have a what's coming up section in our podcast, like what you can look for. And Spencer has something amazing you can look for. So, Spencer, tell us where the bike hoarding is coming from.
Well, so... I don't know if you guys have noticed what happened in the last couple of years. There was a pandemic.
What do you mean?
What?
Yeah, there was a pandemic. There was a virus, I think it's called COVID.
Oh my God, you're coming from the artist. That's why they were sick for a bit. Patient zero.
And it basically shut down the world.
I haven't noticed, actually. Yeah, I heard about this fake vaccine they're talking about.
That's because you podcast. Don't get out. But like during the pandemic, like it's... we would buy growlers of beer and like just in my bubble because I had a good partner and some friends, and we would just like bike around the river and drink beers by the river, and we just had such a great time.
That's great
doing this, and it was like the world was calm. It was a really surreal, you know, almost like being in the eye of a storm where just like everything just feels quiet, you know. So we started doing this a lot. We ride these, they're English 3-speeds, these Raleigh English 3-speeds.
Okay.
They've got like these Sturby Archer hubs, which are basically indestructible. I have a bike from 1951 that's 72 years old, and the hub still works perfectly. Like, so I got 3 speeds, and you only need 3 speeds in life. Hill, chill, and
giving her.
Nice.
Right? Because you don't need 24 single speeds. I'm like, it beats the point of gears. The gears are nice to have with hills. you know? But, like, we've taken these English 3-speeds, like, I've taken them mountain biking, I've gone off-road with them. They're, like, solid all-steel, made in England, really cool bikes. Anyways, it's become this, like, weird obsession, and over the last little while, I keep buying more of them, and I can't help myself, but I found this, like, amazing gold one. They, like, made gold Raleighs between, like, 1969 and 1972, and I have this, like, mint-condition gold Raleigh 3-speed that, like, is amazing.
That's your retirement right there, right? Things like that are an investment, aren't they?
That's the other thing that's crazy. We're both talking about a project you're working on that involves bikes, but you didn't... The collection of bikes didn't start for the project. The project was birthed off of your collection of bikes.
Yeah, and just, you know, so we're sitting, like, literally, we go around and we, like, drink beer, maybe, you know, partake in the cannabis substance.
Partake in cannibalism?
Cannabis. And thinking about the end of the world, right? And then somehow I came up with the idea of a bike apocalypse where, you know, because... Basically, I started thinking about the fact that, you know, gas only has, like, a shelf life of 6 months, right? So gas evaporates. It doesn't stick around. If you gas your tank too long, it will go bad.
I did not know that.
And the fact that, like, if a big solar flare happens, then the Northern Lights would look beautiful, but literally knock out the satellites. So if we had, like, no satellites and no gas processing for 6 months, we would literally be... There would be no Mad Max.
Because
you'd need to, like... have an oil refinery going. So
I didn't know gas could go bad either. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I mean, like, we're on a very precarious, like, perch here, right? Like, keeping the world moving.
Drive. We have 4 months left.
And I started reading, like, so I started reading white papers on, if you were going to have a bike apocalypse, what kind of bicycle would you want? And one of the big things are, like, internal 3-speed hubs, right? Which is just like or internal hubs, because they've got less exposed elements,
okay,
and they last longer. Because if you are in bike apocalypse, it's going to be dirty, dusty, you know. So
other bikes are going to have spikes.
So we built bike apocalypse, and literally, the bikes do have spikes.
Yeah,
and axes made out of, like, bicycle gears.
Oh,
and
yeah,
stuff like that. So I wrote this comic, and Jared Hartnell, amazing illustrator. Like, he was such a art nerd. It's beautiful. He illustrated it for us, and basically he used this thing called screen tones. So we inked the whole thing. So we had some inks, and then he cut out lines, plastic lines, and glued them onto the page as different screen tones to give it, like, almost a pointillism. But I'm like, you know, you probably do that in, like, your Photoshop, like, scan it and do it in Photoshop.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no. Because he said what's really inspiring for him is just finding the little bits and pieces to move around as a puzzle. And this is, you know, where, like, working with an artist is such a joyful experience, because it's like, it's not just about the artist, but the process of how you get there. And he showed me some of the elements around a collar, that's where the scarf was working. It's like, you know, yeah, if you were doing that, you know, digitally, you'd be like, you could do it perfectly.
Yeah.
But doing it imperfectly, you find messy mistakes that look beautiful. And you find those, like, things that, like, yeah, that's inspiring. Anyways, so Bikeopalypse is a 6-page comic that's going into an anthology called Home. Yeah, basically, it's going to be published by Renegade Arts Entertainment. It's going to launch at the Edmonton Expo in October. It's fantastic. There's going to be 20 other Alberta comic book artists and writers that are contributing to it. Yes. And it's going to be super fun. The theme is called Home, and when I pitched it, right, it's like, you know, Rosie's this, like, ginger cyclist, right, riding from home because she lives in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And if you're a scavenger living like that, home isn't where, you know, you live. Home is where your friends are, because you get, like, a bicycle path.
Sure.
So that's the story. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Which is that's why it was inspired by my obsessive biking with my friends.
Home is where the gang is.
Right? As we, like, you know, play some music and, like, drink beers down by the river.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and now I'm just obsessively collecting 3-speed Raleighs, but you can find them super cheap. No one knows what they have. They don't understand the brilliance and beauty of these things.
Cut this part out. Cut this part out. So
no one knows what they have.
They just sell them for so dirt cheap. And I'm like, what? Oh my God, for $100? Yeah, that's easy.
sure.
I'm totally going to keep my eyes open now on Facebook Marketplace. I'll be like sending you all the ads.
Exactly. So there's a lot of projects that you're involved in, especially a lot of the filmmaking stuff you do that I would describe very like broadly as like genre film.
Yeah.
And I just wonder that like, what to you was so exciting about specifically genre film or like genre projects in general? Like what draws you to that internally?
I really enjoy genre films.
Yeah.
They're what I like to watch. They're how I like to escape. And then I like making them. I like building them. Like the Ballad of Shakasaurus. I had this idea where I'm like, okay, can we build a 17 foot long animatronic dino shark and go down to the old Lonesome Dove set and shoot a Western?
Yeah. That puppet was huge.
It took a U-Haul to move
it. Yeah, it was crazy.
It should have been in hindsight, I told the artist, it's made by Brian Cooley, who's like an amazing master sculptor who spent 30 years traveling the world building dinosaur sculptures for the Royal Tyrell, Museum of Natural History. That's all he's done is build dinosaurs. And then during the pandemic, we built a 17-foot-long animatronic dinosaur that takes four, it's so big and massive, it takes four large men to move it from one place to another, or one Michael Roik inside the monster, like powering himself.
Roik was puppeteering it?
Yeah.
Good for him. By himself.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Four large men or one Michael Roik.
Can we tie Brian Cooley to Anna Cooley?
Yes, that is that's Anna Cooley's dad.
Because Anna Cooley is Bart Gates Wilson's niece, and Bart Gates Wilson's husband Alex also does the sculpting of the Tyrell Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, I can fit into any conversation.
Nice.
Anna Cooley directed a number of episodes of Abracadabra. Just putting that in there.
That's
and
right.
And she's fantastic.
She's very cool. Yeah. Anna's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Karen, hit Spencer with our favorite news segment.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So in our theme music, written by Alexander Cowan, she sings Tell Me Your Dreams Over Bacon and Eggs. And so we've been asking all of our guests to tell us, if you're a nighttime dreamer, if you remember your dreams, the wackiest one you remember, the most recent one you had, some nightmare from childhood that you've never let go of. If you're a nighttime dreamer, do you remember your dreams?
I do for like, sometimes I remember the morning, but I've been to the expo and we go out for drinks all the time.
Shout out to the Pin Bar.
Yeah, shout out to the Pin Bar. Shout out Palomino. Shout out a lot of bars. But we tend to go out for drinks. And yeah, sometimes if I have a couple drinks, I don't remember my dreams in the morning. And I'm blanking on my last. But sometimes I wake up being like, oh my God, this is the most ridiculous, amazing thing ever.
Yeah. Is there any like one you had like as a kid that you really remember?
I'm trying. I'm just blanking a little bit. What, daytime dreams?
Daytime dreams.
I mean, do you full-on daydream?
All the time. Normally about golden Raleighs.
Now it's all about bikes.
That's all about bicycles. Just like, I'm thinking about taking like an old, there's a bike swap meetup, I think on May 6th or 7th. And I'm going to go down. Wow. I'm going to try and find an old like vintage 10-speed.
Yeah.
And then like a nice light bike with like speedy wheels. And then put a 3-speed hub in it. Because you only need 3 speeds in life. Kill, chill, and give it.
It's a Franken-cycle.
Is the bike community in Calgary big? Like, I know, like, in some other cities, like, I would say Vancouver, I know it have to have a big bike community. But is it more underground here, or is it, like, pretty prominent that I'm just a fool?
Well, no, they ride above ground.
They ride.
There is a big bike community. They haven't been as active. I went to a Mad Max bike rally last year, like a bike parade last year, and they still do critical mass. It's harder with the pandemic because you can't really congregate in groups.
Sure.
But like Dandy Brewing used to have the Dandy Cycle, mm-hmm. where you dress like a tweed cycle. So there's that stuff that was like before the pandemic, but it's just kind of coming back now. It's still really hard. I find when it comes to the bike community, I think beer bike tours, like just if you go around the Barley Belt or in certain areas,
yeah.
you'll see like groups of people that are like all on bikes. And I'm like, oh, you guys are like crushing breweries, right? Because it's, you know, they have a certain look of glee.
Sure. Yeah. Drunk biking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, but it's true. Like anytime I am cycling and like you pass people, people get this like look, this smile on their face when they're riding their bikes. that is just like, it's just heartwarming to me as well.
That's really nice.
I love people on their bikes, and it's, yeah, you get on a bike and it's just fun. It's a better way to like travel. I have my partner, she's a wonderful woman. We met before the pandemic, but I've been dating since then. She's really into walking. And I've been trying to break her of this. Because I'm like, why don't we just take bicycles? It's faster, it's more convenient. She's like, Spencer, it's 2 blocks away. And I'm like, I know, think of how much time we'll save.
That's right. Look at that lickety split.
Right?
Speaking of travel, you've done the, or at least a smaller kind of expo circuit. Like you mentioned, you're going into the Edmonton Expo. I think you and I met up with the Saskatoon Expo.
So much fun.
Wow. Which other ones have you been to?
I've been to Portland, Vancouver, Toronto.
Wow.
Portland was my favorite.
Yeah, totally.
They actually serve craft beer, like, at your table. So you can be like, it's like here, I've got like coffee and I'm drinking coffee. There, you've got beer.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, when it comes to the Sharkosaurus pitch, 2 pints in, it is glorious.
Can we get some beer? Any craft beer people here at the expo?
That's right.
And I think people are far more interested in buying Sharkosaurus after 2 pints of beer as well.
Hey, I'm a non-drinker and I'm buying that graphic novel. So you pitched it already.
And you know what I'd buy for $1? That The Breakfast Dish is part of the Alberta Podcast Network. Locally grown, community supported. The intro music you just heard and the outro music you're about to hear has been composed by Alexander Kalman. All graphic design for The Breakfast Dish has been done by Morgan Ernter. Spencer, thank you so much for joining us on The Breakfast Dish and taking a break from the current booth you have going.
And I just want to say one more thing.
Please.
The expo, I mean, it was back last year, but it was small. It's just so good coming out of the pandemic to see all these creative people, and there's just so much love in the room and so much love from, like, the fans, and it's big and it's back, and it feels really healthy. Out here.
Even just walking here to the Quarter Horse Room, you see people just like swirling and hugging and like appreciating your cosplays and stuff like that. Like the community is very, very apparent.
Yeah. And you know, we've got sorry, I think you already
know. No.
But we did like just seeing people. Like it's great to see fans, and there's people that know me from here and come back to be like, hey, what's new? What's up?
Right.
Oh, great.
I saw, you can't see now, but there's a couple that run Love and Geeks. They both got matching Sharkosaurus tattoos.
That's really nice.
Oh my lord. That's amazing. But it's like, yeah, like to see something you've done, you know, inspire other people to like start a business and then they get a tattoo. And it's just like, it's great to like meet people, inspire people, be inspired by people. And I love the expo, so.
Well, I love them for giving us the chance to record live here at the expo and talk to you, Spencer Estabrook.
That's right. Inspire some people audibly. Inspire people audibly. Where can people find out more about what you're doing? Like, give me some plugs for One Hit Die, Sharkosaurus, your personals.
You know, if you Google Sharkosaurus, you'll come up with me.
It's going to be the thing.
If you Google One Hit Die, you'll come up with me. My main website is called Dead West Productions. Bikepocalypse with a P, B-I-K-E, Pocalypse.
Yeah.
I put the P in there for all the ASMR lovers.
Now, the last thing we like to do with our guests is, Caramel is a professional advisor, and we'll ask you a personalized question that we did not plan beforehand. It might have something to do with what we talked about, but maybe not. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, this 14-foot shark, if you had to make it breakfast, what are you feeding it?
Bacon and asparagus.
I'm a vegetarian, and I want that right now. With a
squeeze of balsamic vinegar. Brings out the sharpness in the asparagus.
I seriously want that. Just imagine the smells. Anyway.
Well, we have to go get that now. Or else Sharkosaurus will get us. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This has been The Breakfast Dish.